You are listening to Let's Go, the weekly anime podcast about weekly anime from Dynamite of the Brain and Secret of the Sailor Madness. So come along and hang with the Let's Go gang. Dwayne.
Hey.
And it's me, Brian. Just the two of us, because I assume Niall's in transit or...
between places.
Yes, yeah. In limbo. And this week we are talking about the anime that aired between Monday the 5th of February 2018 and Sunday the 11th of February 2018. Oh, Dragon Ball, you've suddenly snuck in into the soundtrack of the episode. Right. Please be quiet, Goku. I'm trying to record a podcast. Okay, we'll start off with Mr. Osamatsu, episode 18, Yami, Alone in the Wind.
Crap, I knew there was something else I meant to do. I meant to read that that translated comic you linked to.
Yes. So this is I don't know if it is a rare occurrence, but this is a definite occurrence of them adapting a strip of the original Mr. Osamatsu, or Osamatsu-kun, rather.
Yeah. Well, that would be the original Osamatsu, yes.
The original strip was called Yami Alone in the Wind in the 80s. It had an OVA version of it made, which I think was set in the... because it's set in during in the Edo period in the 19th century in the comic, and it was in the OVA, but here it appears to be set like the late 50s, early 60s.
Yeah.
In Tokyo. Yeah.
Like after the war, I think is the suggestion here.
We see them building the Tokyo Tower.
That's right. That's kind of a thing of the progress of what era we're in, that kind of thing. Yeah.
And we say original, but the original is Charlie Chaplin's film City Lights.
Yes, if you know the plot of that, you've watched this episode, kind of. Yeah.
Yep. Except wrestling standing in for boxing.
Boxing. Yeah. Yeah.
Which again fits the time period they're in Japan.
Yeah, and obviously the characters playing the different roles. But yeah, other than that, like I was still waiting for the joke, and it never really came.
No, it's just an exercise in look how good we are. we can be straight as well.
Yeah.
And it's really well made. I like the color choices. They've got very subdued palette. Mm. They just like pick out colors here and there.
For like important things, like I think the only reason like things of importance, like the flowers have color, or some of them do anyway.
Yeah.
But I think the only reason the friggin' stuff that Yami got is thrown in his face had color is so you know it was mustard.
Yes.
Not that it was like significant and important to the plot kind of mustard. It was just like because otherwise it'll just look like he threw something in Yami's face.
Yes. The brothers' shirts are picked out in low-key pastel versions of their colors.
Well, they all have nearly the same haircut, so I mean, like, despite the different faces and voices, you might mix them up this episode. Yes.
I did like their shirts. I did like their look as like low-level sort of yakuza henchmen.
Yeah.
They are actually gainfully employed in this story.
It's not legal though.
No,
so...
it's not legal.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, they're still working, kind of.
So the story is that Yami meets this girl who's blind, and he's basically...
Well, at the start, the story is Yami is basically Yami as we know him.
Yes.
Everyone hates him, and he's a piece of shit.
Yeah, I wonder if the bit where he steals the fish and goes up the pole is a reference to the Nierome from other... strips from because the movement from what little I've seen of Nierome and the fact it's a fish and he runs up and the way he runs up the telegraph pole was quite cat-like, and that's not in the original strip obviously because they're set in the past and there's no telegraph poles that far back.
right,
he's a no good bum is what he is. He's the worst of the worst. He'll eat food on the floor.
Mm.
He'll steal things. But then, yes, he meets this girl who's blind, and there's an American surgeon who might be able to sort her eyes out. It's going to cost a lot of money. And so he makes good.
He starts actually working for a living, kind of.
But it's not enough. And Chibita's also in love with this girl, and he wants to pay for it, but... she wants...
She refuses because the Yami promised.
Yes, and so he has to like come up with a scheme to make it look like Yami had paid for it.
Like, he realizes he loves this girl at the, I was going to say the boxing match, the wrestling match.
Yes.
Where he's like, oh my God, who is that? That kind of thing. Because Yami's there to try and win the prize money, but despite being, you know, not knowing karate, knowing crazy, he's not, he's still like just the skinny motherfucker. Yes.
But he would have won
also,
if
also Chibita had cheating.
Cheated, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, after that, because they're both in love with a girl, he tries to organize it so that Yami's pride will be intact, but he can pay for it.
I did like the brothers kind of like very obviously. It's like, oh, wow, he's going to walk through town. It'd be very easy to rob him. He is a very small fellow. How much was it, you say? And when exactly was this? You know, just going through the entire, like basically laying out the plan for Yami in front of Yami. It was pretty fun.
And even then, Yami struggles to go through with it.
Yeah, yeah. He's terrified.
Oh, yeah, I really like the bit where everybody sort of stops him from being arrested.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It was kind of like a callback to the earlier bit where they're all chasing him down the street with sticks. But this one, they're all like pretending to hit him and distracting the cops.
Yeah.
Using the various charms or lack thereof.
But yeah, he gets the money to them, but then is arrested. And then when he's out of prison years later, he sees her running a flower shop.
Called Yami's Flower Shop or something like that.
Yeah.
Because obviously she never knew what he looked like, so. Yeah.
But so unlike City Lights, he can't bring himself to go and introduce himself.
They kind of do the... What, that wasn't that film, was it? Chaplin with the little dog at the end? Because he has the cat at the end.
I don't know. No.
I think that was a different film. I'm trying to remember which one now. But yeah, they were kind of doing the callback to that where he's... Well, he's still a Yami. He'll get by.
And also, this is a fictional, this is a imaginary story.
I don't know. They've called back to some of the other serious ones that they've done.
That is true, yes.
But maybe Yami wasn't a dick once.
No, it was a good story. It was something different, which is the thing I always liked about Mr. Osamatsu, was them always willing to try something different.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like, there's jokes in this, but it's not, it's just played pretty straight. Like,
yes. And, yeah, like the way they put all the different characters into other roles, which is a thing they used to do a lot more in the comic and in the previous series. Which I suppose they do always, here like, as well.
Did they always replace the Osamatsus with, like, interchangeable goons, or...?
I don't know about that. I know the Dion would be... He'd be the guy who was most used in, like, loads of different roles.
Because he's such a, like, forgettable face, you know? Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, that was Mr. Osamatsu. Yeah, it was. Yeah, so it's interesting that the most different thing they can do is to be like Osamatsu.
That is kind of weird. Yeah, it's like I guess it's saying it's like we're still the same show, kind of. Yeah.
Next on the list, it's Shonen Ashibe Go Go Gomachan, episode 63. I'm not gonna say goodbye. And we recorded this on a Thursday today, and I watched this a long time ago. Can I remember what happened in it?
I was tempted to watch the next episode, because I was just like, when I was watching it, was there. And I was like, do I really want to? It's like, no, I'll only get shit mixed up.
I was going to say, this ends on a cliffhanger.
Yeah, yeah. Another one.
So, everyone shows up in Sapporo.
Well, like, initially they all kind of make decisions to show up. It's like, hey, check it out, it's Sagao-kun, and we got to go help them and stuff. And what is it? One of the teachers, their homeroom teacher, is, like, having a winning a contest, a lottery, where she wins 10 tickets to the place they need to go, but there's actually, like, 11 people. So it's like, who shouldn't go? That guy. Decides.
Wasn't that last week's episode?
I thought that was this week's episode. I thought they all decided to go this episode.
No, I thought they did that last week. And
yeah, now I'm worried I'm mixing them up again. I'm glad I didn't watch the next one then. Yeah,
because that last week's episode was the one where the guy connived to get the plane trip.
Mm.
And it turns out in this one that...
he wants him to build snow sculptures.
Yeah, take part in that snow sculpture. And his other plan is to send the pair of them off to the Arctic Circle to go to and find
rob a baby,
seal.
So they can replace Gorma-chan with the seal. In the zoo, I think, not actually replace Gorma-chan to a sheep.
So in order to make the mother of Gorma-chan happy, they'll make another mother unhappy.
But Ashiba won't know about that, and that's fine. And you send those two motherfuckers as well. I did like the way the twins are entirely useless in this, like Ashiba and Gomar are just walking through town, and it's like, wow, fucking, I guess they're really like the favorites, those two guys. Yeah, I mean, like, I wonder why we don't get the good jobs. It's like, because he's literally behind you. The kid's behind you right now. You guys did nothing.
So Ashiba's run away with Gomar-chan. He's very upset. And then by the end of the episode, Gomar-chan appears to be dying.
Of the cold, which is like, how is this possible? It's a seal. It's not like it's a particularly skinny seal either. I'm pretty sure they got like fat reserves and stuff. I don't think it should be the cold getting to them.
Yeah, so this,
maybe it's lack of ice pops. I don't know.
This snow festival has been going on these past few weeks, I think. So it is all tied in with current events.
So the Olympics are going to show up as well, I suppose.
Well, we had all the ice skating.
That's true. Yeah, yeah.
This was a pretty good. It was a lot of focus on the guys from the company, I think, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, I could be wrong now, but I thought the other half of the episode was all the guys who are still in wherever the fuck Ashiba lives, trying to get to.
No, Sugal's by 3 minutes in. I'm looking at it now.
No, it's not the Sugao's there, but the restaurant guys.
You might be right. Hang on.
And the Ashiba's friends all want to go as well.
No, yes, you're right. No, the lottery was in this episode.
Okay, yeah, because I remembered. What's the fucking sports teacher again's name?
Tendo.
I was kind of glad he showed up because we haven't seen him in a good bit, and I did like his thing of going to like of that shitty guy going like, yeah, you can't come. How's the tunnel go? You stay.
That's Mal's uncle.
Yeah. Even though he wanted to help, he did.
Yeah, well, they should have brought the guy with his coat along.
Oh, he'd have the exact item they needed to solve the situation. Yes. Yeah, that's true. He was appeared to be knocked out unconscious on the restaurant table. I don't know. Just to keep him out of the plot, get rid of that Deus Ex Machina.
Yeah. Yeah, he'd solve it too easily. Okay, I'm trying to figure out whether next week's the next episode is the last one. Let me see. It looks like it is going into repeats after this.
Okay. So we might have to just keep an eye on it just in case they sneak some new ones on. I think they did that to us before.
Yeah, I think you've got a month of repeats at the least. Because it looks like the next episode after 64 is the one where they disguise him as a dog to enter the dog contest.
Right. Well, I presume it doesn't end very sadly if they're going to go into repeats.
Yes, that would be... it would be weird to kill him off and then immediately come back.
With the fun stuff, yeah.
Righty-ho. Next up, we've got Michiri Neko. And again, I've just written down the titles.
Yeah.
Can we remember what happened in them? The trick. We were back in the crane, weren't we? It was
the trick
where to grab were the first two, and they were all about like... So the trick is like how to grab them, and then
It's like suddenly and sharply, so you basically like knock them out.
Yes.
Like, you knocked the wind out of him, and I was like, what a fucking cruel show this is.
And the where to grab one is the one with the stretchy cat.
Yeah, it's like face stretches all the way across. Because he only grabs it by the top of the head. You know, you grab the top of the thing and you're barely hanging on to it, but the entire cat stretches into the thing. And your man's like, I don't want to take it out. That's gross.
And then you got changing, which is, there's the one who's like named as if he's part of a stand-up comedy team.
He's playing the straight man, but apparently he's really weird.
Well, yeah, he's trying on a new skin, and then we see in Identity the fur of whatever's underneath the skin sticking out. He's like, what on earth is he?
Yeah, it's not one bright color. It's multicolored, unlike the rest of the
cats. It's like an iridescent, and it's also like got... I'm not sure if it's fur or scales.
Yeah, it's weird. There's a lot of questions asked about it, I suppose.
Then, I can't remember what was curious.
Curious.
What was curious?
What was curious? What was evening shower? Because they tend to go in pairs, don't they?
They do. I don't remember either of them, though. Perhaps because the middle one was like so out there.
Yeah.
It,
distracted from it. All right,
Curious. Evening shower. I've gone too far. I'm in the end credits. Because the end credits are... They're following... they see a guy with a shirt with a fish on it.
Oh, and they're all following him through town. Yes. And everyone's looking at the cats following the guy and going, like, the fuck is that about? Yeah. And the evening shower is similar in that there's a guy with an umbrella. The cat's like, hey, like, friggin' let me in on that. And all the other cats do it too. And your man's like, don't worry about me. And they're all just like, thank you so much. You've saved us. That was it.
Yes. Yeah. He's still standing in the rain, but the umbrella is covering the cats. Okay. We got it. Just needed one visual clue to help us.
There's a surprising amount of things going on to try and remember all of it, especially at any length of time away.
And next up, we've got Dwayne. Have you got the next episode of Kokoku?
Kokoku, fifth movement, I was going to say. Yes, I can stop talking about this if you prefer. Cause...
No, it's all right. It gives me an excuse to talk about Psyche K.
You don't need an excuse. let me see. They're all still discussing about the Herald, and Yaron explains her tragic backstory where her parents were driving back and they'd come from like a when they're giving away stuff from someone's estate and it's like, oh, you've gained their property or an amount of money or that kind of thing. And I think they're coming back with like one of those weird rocks. And they're like, oh, fuck, we only got this stupid rock, whatever. And one of the two kids are like bullying each other in the back, herself and her brother is crying because he punched her and she punched him back. And his tears get into it at the exact moment that the grandpa was doing the stop time thing to let her grieve for her dying dog kind of thing.
Yeah.
But then the family is stuck in that family are stuck in the thing as well. And they don't understand why nobody's moving. And the father kind of gives up first. It's like, oh, I guess we'll just live here. And he sort of floats into the sky with tendrils coming out of him and turns to like dust. Same thing happens to her mom, same thing has happened to her brother. It nearly happens to her, but the little girl, when she was wandering through town with the dog, like pushes the jellyfish out of her, like knocking her out of the world rather than having her turn into one of those heralds. So apparently if you like give up or something, you end up turning into a herald. And she explains this to the guy. He's like saying, I'll give you this information if you help me catch this girl, because I want to catch her to see if I can get my family out of here. Because she'll be able to knock the jellyfish out of them. And the one guy is like, kind of like, I don't know, what's in for us? Like, well, I explained to you, like, you know, how this stuff works and that you need to keep focused and so you won't get caught. And it's like, you're going to have to give me like some more. How about you have sex with me? And she's kind of like embarrassed. And I was like, this is weird. And she's like, okay, when we're done all this, he's like, good. Okay, excellent. But then the grandpa teleports in the room and your one punches the jellyfish straight out of that guy. So I don't have to think about that shit no more. And I was like, thank fuck. It nearly seems to be setting up something between her and the kind of, the pockmark faced guy. Who's like kind of fallen in with her because he's like, okay, everyone else in this fucking cult that we're in are crazy, so I'm just going to hang out with you. And the grandpa and his granddaughter and her dad they're trying to rescue the dad, and he's been really obstinate because he's kind of like, oh man, if I'd known we could stop time, I would have solved all our money problems and I wouldn't have lost my job and all this kind of shit. And I'm just like, how the fuck would you not have lost your job? But yeah, they're trying to do escapes, and all the thugs are kind of menacing around them, but not really willing to get too close for the fear of getting, you know, jellyfish punched out of them. Yeah, no, it's just kind of like furthering along the plot and like what the various guys are in. Her brother and the little kid get bushwhacked by the guy hanging around in the last episode, and somebody got stabbed, either the brother or the guy in the what looks like a convenience store shirt got stabbed. Probably him, I assume, because it's like, you're really going to kill off the brother at this stage? Seems a bit odd. But yeah, no, it's still pretty good. And they're kind of introducing new rules, and or at least explaining the rules kind of further. I'm kind of curious as to what I still don't know what the baddies, the cult's end goal is. They were practicing, seeing if they could, like, I need to bring up murderous intent to like stab this guy, but not so much murderous intent that fucking Herald comes along and kills me straight away, just enough so I can stop really quick. So he's like, you know, he's kind of bracing himself. He's like, whew, whew. And like, it managed to summon a little one, and your one is really worried that it's her brother, that kind of thing. And it seems to be suggested that her brother, her mother, and father are all summoned as heralds, and they just stop their murderous intent and just kick the shit out of the heralds. But and she kind of like, I didn't want to save them or anything. I just wanted to like inter their bones, that kind of thing. And I was just like, Jesus, that's really horrible. So I'm not exactly sure what her plan is now, if those were her family. So yeah, there's just kind of a lot of keeping the plot going, keeping adding to what's there. Yeah, I'm still enjoying it. I was worried about that whole sex weird thing, but at least, you know, that guy got, it's like, no, we're not doing that. That was just there for a joke. And I was like, okay, it's a bad joke, but that's not the worst.
Right. In The Disastrous Life of Psyche K this week, we start with The Disastrous Life of Emu Refuta, which introduces a new character, one of the new first years. And this is, she thinks she's going to be, have everyone wrapped around her finger when she enters high school. She thinks she's super cute. Everyone's going to worship her. But then she doesn't realize that there's already a girl in school who is also already worshipped, Teru Hashi, one of the main characters. And so it's all about her illusions being shattered by Teru Hashi deliberately. She is deliberately making... Yes. She offers to take her around the school, and basically just to show how much more loved she is. Than, so it's basically like showing this new first year her place, so she doesn't get any ideas.
Yeah, yeah.
Trying to be queen of the school like she is.
Like, I figured they'd do the thing of like, oh, she accidentally like shows her up the whole time, but on purpose is actually an inversion of that.
Yeah, it looks like it's accidental all the way to like the final line of the segment, okay. When it cuts to her thoughts, and then you're like, okay, yes. And that's why Psyche feels sorry for this girl, and we don't know why he feels sorry for this girl.
Because he was hearing her thoughts, yes, the entire time.
Yes,
right, right.
Yeah. Then it's April Fool's Deceit, in which Kaido, the Chunie character, is basically going around the school telling terrible lies, even worse than the ones he normally tells about himself. About having superpowers and an organization after him. And he convinces Nendo that various things. But the main one is that Tokyo Tower is going to shoot a beam of light out of it later on today.
What a very specific lie.
But then everyone calls him out on his lies. Like, but Nendo's still believing them all. But every so often during the episode, he accidentally sees Psyche doing one of his psychic powers, and he tries to convince people. It's like a boy who cried wolf type situation.
Oh, okay. Like, he's levitating right now. It's like, no, he's not.
So Psyche feels bad that Kaido is worse off than he was at the start of the day. He was lying, but he didn't deserve all this, being accused of a lying when he wasn't lying.
So, when he was telling the truth about Psyche, yeah.
So at the end of the episode, Psyche does cause a beam of light to shoot out the Tokyo Tower, thus making some of the ridiculous things that Kaido says true, and Nendo's back to being his friend again. Then we've got Spring's Ultimate Weapon, in which Psyche gets hay fever and keeps on blowing things up with his telekinesis every time he sneezes. Which then is, that is made worse because Nendo is trying to show off to him how he sneezes, so he keeps on trying to sneeze. So he like has tablets that he can control it with, but they end up getting taken away from him, and then Nendo pulls out, I can't remember what sort of plant it is, but he's got a plant inside his jacket in order to try and make himself sneeze so he can show off how he sneezes to Psyche. Anyway, just involves Psyche running away lots of from Nendo, trying not to sneeze and blow the school up.
Like, what way does he sneeze that he wanted to show it off?
I don't know if we even see that.
Okay.
Because, again, the focus is normally on Psyche just trying to not blow the school. He blows part of the school up at one point. Yeah. But, then you've got recycled trash cleanup competition where Hiro, the ridiculously hot-blooded character whose trousers are always falling down. I think that might have been written out of the comic by this point, because I don't remember his trousers falling down for a long time. I think that was an early gag which they lessened off on. He drags them all into this recycle trash cleanup competition where everyone in the neighborhood goes around picking up trash around the neighborhood, and you earn points based on the type of trash. And it basically becomes, it's more like Hunter Hunter than a sports anime. Because there's there's these two devious types who take part in this competition. And they're talking about how, well, they're like doing all the logistics of what are the most effective things. You've got to use a broom to pick up cigarette butts. They're the easiest ways of getting massive amounts of points quickly.
Oh, the stratagems and everything. Right, right.
Yeah, so it's like a lot of talking around the thing. But yeah, they eventually get their comeuppance at the end, and then it's cutting through the silence, the ghost in the music room, in which the music room is being haunted by a ghost of a former student, and what's the guy? Oh, Toritsuka, the other psychic at the school, the exorcist character, he tries to deal with it by hitting on her, and that's how they get the ghost to leave, because she just gets fed up with him constantly hitting on her, even though she's a ghost. Like, Psyche's
like, was
out.
That his plan, or is he actually?
No, it was not his plan.
Okay, he's just being a creep.
Yeah, he's just being a creep. And but then the even once they've taken care of it, the school decide to get rid of the piano that apparently the parents of the student had donated after she died. And Toritsuka feels bad, so he gets Psyche to do a favor and steal the piano. And then it cuts to the right at the end to him with this grand piano now in his tiny house. He's got no longer has any room to sleep. And apparently he thinks this will attract the ghost to his house.
Does he think that's what she's haunting? Right.
Yes, but it's pretty clear that won't happen, but... It was, yeah, again, it's all these. A lot of these things are either showing somebody to be nastier than they normally appear or nicer than they appear on the outside. So it's like, Toritsuka is a terrible pervert, but he was trying to be quite sweet and he got sentimental about the piano. He didn't want to just see it thrown out. But yeah, it was another good episode. I don't know when the other new characters are going to show up. I think there's one more psychic to join the school at this point.
What other kind of psychicness have they got to cover, considering how much they have?
I think the new character is a soothsayer.
Okay.
So then you've got a variety of different types of psychics covered. You've got Psyche, who's like the science fiction one.
Science fiction ones, yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
You've got Toritsuka, who deals mainly in ghosts, and we'll see what a soothsayer does. I assume she'll predict the future in various ways.
Hmm.
Righty-ho, back onto things we've all seen. Garrow, Vanishing Line, Episode 17, The Slant-Lined. All fighting, all the time, for the entire episode.
Yeah, I think they're trying to make up for the lack of horrors in the last episode by having like a ridiculous amount of Mad Max fucking car horrors in this one. Yeah,
I was going to say, if you like Jason the Wild Warriors, this is the episode for you.
Yeah. That's true as well. I think my favorite bit of the action in this was Luke's return to the fold and him like doing the paragliding shooting motherfuckers in the air. That was pretty sweet. There's some nice animation there.
So yeah, basically Bishop shows up with a massive amount of horrors that he's turned into cars and trucks.
Yeah, I forgot to mention that bit in the last episode where it was just like, well, Doctor his name is like Dr. Vincent or Dr. Billy or something. Doctor, not that threatening a name. This crazy looking elf-eared motherfucker who's like, oh, are they prepared? It's like, yes, they're all prepared. It's like, brilliant. I'll attack friggin' Garrow for no good reason. Because we know he's coming here and we've established that, oh, brilliant. Now we don't have to fucking kidnap her or anything because he's just bringing her straight to us. It's like, yeah, fuck it. Let's attack him with an army of Karras. Why not?
You block out the sun so that the horrors can operate during daylight hours.
I didn't know they couldn't. I don't know why that I hadn't figured that out up to now.
So Sword goes off to deal with them while Gina and Sophie drive as far as they can away from them.
I did like giving Sophie the minigun in the back of the car.
Yeah, unfortunately, Bishop pursues them with some other horrors, which are like kites.
Yeah. Yeah, kites with weird faces.
Yeah. I think, as you say, Gina gives Sophie the minigun. She just says, just pull the trigger. You don't have to aim.
It's a minigun. It'll be fine.
No, she does aim. It's just a shame because I thought what we were going to do, I thought Gina was going to do the aiming.
They were
going
to be magic. Yeah.
Driving.
Either that or with magic bullets. But it's kind of like, it's a minigun. It's fine. Just shoot vaguely in the direction. And as Sophie pulls off a few shots, it's like, oh, okay, I get it.
But they get to the car, but luckily Luke's back.
He's got a new haircut, he's got a new wardrobe. he still brought the same guns though, so that's good.
Then they give Sophie to, what's the ring's name?
Zaruba, okay.
to run away, and then... they'll stay here and deal with this, but then Zaruba's like, oh, it's a bit weird that they let us off out so easily and didn't pursue us, so he heads back.
Yeah, and I did like his thing of Sophie, like, I was like, are you okay, Zaruba? Because the bike's all beat up, and he's like, what the hell do you think I am? I did like that line of him just going like, I'm not a living motorbike or anything, okay, it's fine.
Though he then later, then goes and dies.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's like, oh, well, he can die, you know, if he explodes himself at, what's that guy calling himself, Knight or something?
Knight, yes, the Black Knight. Yeah. Sword, Luke and Gina are fighting this other horror which went underground, which apparently can operate in the sunlight.
Yeah,
it's like
I don't
a big
know what the
Hydra
deal was.
Type thing.
Yeah, like loads of tentacles with like little metal faces on it. It reminded me of like a boss in Bayonetta or something. I can't remember which one.
Zaruba tried to fight Knight on his own.
But he knew he couldn't beat him, so he just kind of drives at him and explodes.
Yes. And then,
to which Knight compliments him as like, very impressive
and
for
comes,
a motorbike to do this much damage to me.
And absorbs Zaruba into his own body.
Hmm.
And gets a power up for doing that. So I almost wonder if Zaruba knew that that had to happen at some point.
That he had to give up himself or something.
Yeah.
Maybe he was just trying to hang out. It's like, well, there's no reason for me to fucking do it anytime soon. Sword's pretty badass. I think at some point he says in this episode, like, he might not look like it, but Sword is actually quite strong. And I was like, who the fuck do you think you're partnered with, dude? Yeah, so he thought he was fine up to this point. I was like, well, I might as well sacrifice myself and give Sword the extra spiky version.
Have you seen anybody else?
As big as that man. Fucking hell, like. He eats steaks like he's Fred Flintstone. He's ridiculous.
And they fight to a draw, and he backs off, saying, I'll kill you next time.
Mm-hmm.
Honest, I will.
Yeah, so it's odd that the big sacrifice was done by a ring slash motorbike.
Yeah, and Gina's car's wiped out as well at this point.
Oh, yeah, shit. I mean, like, and I don't know what happened to Luke's bike. That's been gone, or was that destroyed earlier on? So they're going to have to just walk?
I guess. Yeah, because they're in the middle of the desert.
Yeah, well.
Oh, unless they've got some sort of magic. I don't know how real those cars were.
That's true. I just figure that they're real, what with all the equipment and getting them, seeing them get mangled and everything, yeah.
There's a weird bit early on when the things are arriving and we get a cut to the waitress looking up amazed. So can she detect that this was happening from...
No. She was at the last episode, they stopped at a gas station that she was working at.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah.
Yeah, and she kind of looks up when the sun went dark. So I don't know what the fucking deal is with her either. It's like, because I don't think she's everywhere. I think that would be weird.
So, well, she might be like Nurse Joy from Pokemon.
There's just loads of her. Okay, yeah.
She might be everywhere, because that might be why she's so pale. She might be like a golem or something.
Right, okay.
And what's the furry animal called?
Oh, that thing gets a fucking 10, yeah.
I thought that as well, and then I realised, it's probably just dust being kicked up from the...
Are you sure it wasn't a 10? Because, like, it...
I mean, I thought it might be 10. I thought it'd be weird if this was two shows where that's animals got 10s.
In this week, the furry animals fucking got 10 in this. It's a weird thing to make twice in the same week.
But because I think it was just supposed to be dust and settled on it.
But, like, the joke was it looks like a 10 lines and that kind of thing. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, because it'd been wearing sunglasses as well for some reason.
Because it was sleeping on top of the car. It didn't want to get its eyes burned by the sun, I guess. I don't know.
Did it ask to borrow them, or did it buy its own pair while they're in the town last episode?
Oh, I don't know, dude. It's a very strange show often. I still don't know what even Bishop's deal is. He keeps, like, teleporting away into mist, going, like, can't catch me. Presumably you can, because otherwise he's going to be impossible to beat. You know?
Yeah, he's a creepy dude. Seems to be his
main
deal.
Even Gina unloading like a clip into him kind of goes like, yeah, that's not going to kill him.
Right, next up we've got that other tanned animal. It's Working Buddies, episode 6, Traffic Surveying Buddies.
I think he called it, it's the weirdest episode so far. Just strange.
Yes, so they're doing traffic surveying, and then their boss, an Angora rabbit, says they've got to go and do traffic surveying at the river.
See, initially he's like, okay, so you know how to traffic survey. It's like, yeah, there's different buttons that you press for, like, depending on what you're trying to get. Like, if you're going, like, trucks or two-wheeled things, or, you know, a certain level of, like, car or van. And, or if you're doing people, it could be by sex or by age or by, you know, that kind of thing. I mean, it's like, yeah, we know how to break up the various different traffic.
I did find this fascinating, because I do see them about, and I don't really know how it works. So this was a fascinating insight into how traffic surveying works.
Yeah, it seems pretty simple. I've seen people with the counters as well.
Yeah. I assume it's just counting vehicles, but maybe they do break it down as much as they do here. But yes, we've got traffic surveying at the river. I want you to count the number of crocodiles and you to count the number of rabbits.
And as he says this, there's nothing but sharks moving by on the river. And it's kind of like, but crocodiles. And at no stage, I figured he was going to go by. Like, he was the one rabbit. Aha, he should have counted me, you know, that kind of way. But no, that wasn't the joke. Some of the sharks were riding other sharks like motorbikes.
Those were two-wheeled crocodiles.
Those are two-wheeled crocodiles. A killer whale. You got to mark that one down. And your man's like, there's no button for killer whale. And the other guy just getting bored out of his gourd because there's no rabbits going down the river. There's no crocodiles either. But, you know, your man insists that these are crocodiles.
And working out in the sunshine gives Tapio a tan somehow.
Yeah, which initially I was kind of looking at him and was like, is he a different color than usual? I thought maybe they'd gone off model, but no, they did explain it.
The Angora rabbit gets incredibly fluffy. Tapio starts growing Angora fur.
Oh, because he shared the sunscreen. The rabbit shared his sunscreen.
Oh, that was it, yes. And of course,
it's some sort of horrible infection, I think.
And of course, the animal that cannot be named rides by on the back of a crocodile. Sorry, a shark.
A shark. Because initially he's like, oh, that's a rabbit. No, that's that weird thing again. Should I count that? It's like, just ignore that. And the weird body horror of him kind of scratching himself, and there's just like a clump of Angora fur growing out of him. What is this show? I do not know.
I liked the doing the ticking and it seeming like a rhythm game. I didn't need them to point it out, which they did do like a little bit later.
They went a little too obvious with the joke, because obviously the way it was kind of scrolling down and across is like, oh yeah, I get it, like a rhythm game, that makes sense. But they specifically call out the joke. Yeah.
But yeah, it was a nice return to the heights of surrealism.
I guess it can't do surreal the whole time, because otherwise you'd get immune to it.
Yeah, I think so.
Mm.
It's nice that he has different takes on how to get comedy out of these situations.
Mm.
Next up, we got Bono Bono, in which we've got There's a Fish, episode 46, in which a fish keeps on being left outside Fishing Cat's cave, and it's up to Chipmunk, Bono Bono, and Wolverine's dad to figure out.
Well, initially he goes to Wolverine's dad because, you know, he's smart, but, you know, he has no good solutions to this. He's like, dude, it's a free fish. Just fucking eat the fish. And he's like, I'm not going to fucking eat it. I don't know where it's fucking been. Like, I'll eat it. Fucking, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And initially I thought it was Bono because Bono has left fish for Fishing Cat, but he specifically gave them to him. So Fishing Cat's okay with that. It's okay if I know who the fish is from. That kind of thing. Wolverine's dad is like, it's probably just someone you helped who just wants to thank you. Because you're Fishing Cat. You like fish. I did like some of Bono's ideas. Like, oh, I know who did this. It was a... Oh, fuck. I've forgotten his name now. The guy we've never seen before.
Yeah, who doesn't talk. But he doesn't really talk. Likes he just fish.
He squeaks and makes him embarrassed.
Is he supposed to be a beaver or something?
Something like that. River otter? I don't bloody know. It's impossible to know. But yeah, he's embarrassed about, yeah, I kind of do like fish. It's like, why would it be him?
Who thinks it's birds? Is that Bono as well? Obviously, Chipmunk's got the weirdest idea that a worm.
Yeah. Oh, it's like the friggin' stabbing someone with the icicle thing. He's trying to like friggin' detective his way out of this. That's why there was no evidence.
A worm had caught a fish, was dragging it, but when he got near Fishing Cat's cave, the fish ate the worm.
The perfect crime.
My other favourite bit is when Bono's offering to eat the fish. Like, I can stay here and eat the fish.
I'll just sit here and eat the fish. And he's like, no, you can't do that. It's like, okay, well, how about if I stand like 10 feet further back? He's like, no, that's no good. Okay, how about if I stand over like way across? And Fishing Cat's like following him down his garden path, essentially. And it's like, what if I hang myself upside down from the tree and tie myself up? And it's like, all right, fine, if you really fucking want to eat the fish. Yes, this works. It's like, no, Bono. No, you dumb motherfucker.
Yeah, the fish pile up, they rot, and eventually...
I did like him not getting the fish, and then he has to, like, clean them off.
And eventually he eats the fish, and no more come.
Yeah, it was whoever was leaving them there just wanted you to eat the fish. That's it.
Yeah.
And I assume we'll get no answers for this. We might. It might be actually very intricate, but it's a very weird woods.
Yes, because we're now in the position where we can't see an episode ahead and see whether it continues next week.
Which I think that's fun. It's just unfortunate that I can't binge them anymore. Yeah.
Yeah. I do wonder if Wolverine's dad's right that it is somebody he helped. That seems like the most reasonable opinion.
But why they were watching, waiting for him to eat the fish, and then like, okay, as soon as he's eaten it, right.
That is true.
He's accepted my thanks.
I assume that Fishy Cat's suspicious that it's the bear or somebody trying to poison him.
He's a generally suspicious kind of guy. He isn't top of the jungle for nothing, you know.
I'll have to look at what the other guy's name is and also what animal he is. His name is probably the animal. They probably just haven't translated the name or something.
Okay. Because sometimes they just give animals weird names, like that weird fluffy rabbit.
Yeah.
Mm.
Next up, we've got... Where have I lost my list of things? It's Classicaloid. Episode 19, The Melancholy of Schubert. I'm going to say this is the best episode of season 2 so far.
I hate Mozart is what I will fucking say. Fucking, I mean, like, I know Schubert also like lets himself get involved in this. It's like, dude, just walk away. Just leave it be.
That's the essence of this episode, is that he can't walk away.
He can't walk away from something. He can't let something lie. If Mozart is being a dick and forcing you to buy him orange juice by just pretending to be a fucking child, it's like, don't buy him orange juice. It's like, dude, I'm not fucking paying for your orange juice. It's very simple, but he can't not let it lie.
But it's complicated. He's one of these guys with vivid memories of his past life.
He remembers everything, and yet somehow that manages to screw him over all the time.
Because the fact is that he doesn't hate Mozart. He hates the fact that he was accused of being compared to Mozart. He was ripping off Mozart by...
Also, Mozart is a shit.
Salieri. So that's not really helping. That's not helping matters. No.
No.
He'd like to like him because he knows why he doesn't like him, but yeah, Mozart makes himself hard to like.
Salieri, yeah, even in this episode, it is Salieri. I'm wondering if that's going to be one of the other classicaloids, because I think that would have loads of in-group drama.
It would, yes. The fact they keep his face in shadow.
So they can, like, it's not like they look like they're fucking pastels anyway, but he could look like anything at this fucking stage,
yes.
Considering hippos are up for grabs.
It feels like, if not this season, it's a thing they could drop if they want to do a third season.
Yeah, exactly.
Because obviously the interaction is plenty with other characters.
But I did like the setup in this where they're trapped in the elevator and they're playing that, I've forgotten the name of that syllable game.
Yeah, I know what you mean, yeah.
Yeah, but, and he's trying to argue with Mozart, but he can't stop playing the game because Mozart's like, oh, I'm going to count down from five. And if I count down, then you lose. Five, four, yeah. No, we weren't talking about that. Three, two. And he's like, fuck.
So the plot of this episode, tell it so good because we want to get to talking about the best bits of it. The plot of the episode is very simple. Kanai sends Schubert out to go and do a job that Mozart should have done.
I wanted to send Mozart out, but yes, he fucked off.
Is to get to this shop by 5 o'clock in order to get the deal on these eggs.
It was like 1 yen a box or something, wasn't it?
Yes.
It was something like one a customer, obviously, because, you know, someone to take advantage. But I was like, oh, that's actually a very good deal. It's only 6 eggs, but still, cheap.
That's all he has to do. But then he runs into Mozart. Mozart's hair gets caught on his...
More like Mozart fucking involves himself. He wanted to just walk on by, but yes. Mozart was like, hey, what you doing? Going shopping? Cool, I'll come too. they end up like hair attached to jacket, and he's like, okay, we have to cut your hair off. He's like, no, you have to cut your jacket up.
They
kind of handcuffed each other thing. All the scissors are gone.
Put all the scissors in town.
To practice opening Amazon packages.
Well, no, he wants to find the best scissor for
the
opening.
The ones that feels the best.
Yes.
That was it. Yeah.
He's living the online ordering life. I have to say, having Amazon Prime, I was like, do I need to buy a great pair of scissors?
I generally just use a knife or my finger, which is
the worst
idea.
Yeah, I use a modeling knife most of the time, yeah.
Yeah.
So they ask an old lady where a hardware store is, because they're like, surely the hardware store will have some scissors. There's one in this building, and they head off in, but they don't hear the old lady telling them not to use the lift.
Yeah, she's very slow to respond to their initial question, and then she kind of turns around, oh, by the way, don't use the lift, because it always breaks. Oh, you've already gone. Never mind.
So it breaks down, and then they break it further when the...
But Mozart breaks it further.
Well, is it Mozart? I think it's Schubert's fault.
It's the combination of them. It's just like, oh, God.
Schubert's the one who gets physical and causes him to spill his orange juice that he made Schubert buy for him.
Yeah, you see how I'm kind of blaming more Mozart here, though, right? Because, like, worst-case scenario, Mozart would have gotten... Actually, no, Mozart probably would have gotten to the shop, but worst case scenario, he would have got caught by a kite or trapped in an elevator or trapped in a women's changing room.
Kanai's fear is that Schubert seems to go missing a lot.
That's why she doesn't trust him for this job, which I think Schubert's an all right guy, but yeah, this is very time dependent, and he does go off on wild adventures. Like she mentions, like, last time you got abducted by aliens and came back as a robot, so I don't fucking know about this, Schubert.
The B plot is that Beethoven... Once he sees this gyozaloid machine.
It sounds similar to his name, and it is an automatic gyoza making machine, and he's trying to convince the shop owner to let him make gyoza with it, and if his gyoza tastes so good, the shop owner has to give it to him for nothing. And the shop owner's like, no, that's a bad idea.
But then we see him later with the machine, and
that's the entirety of the B plot. We know it worked out for him some fucking how.
Yeah, so
which I kind of love. Yeah.
We don't know whether he bought it or whether he convinced him to. His gyoza was so good that he was giving it for free. then we get like a succession of bottle episodes almost. Where the first they're stuck in a lift. Yeah. They get out the lift, then they're stuck in a women's changing room for dodgy nightclub.
Yeah, initially they're stuck in the changing room. Then they realize it's a women's changing room where the women are trying to get in. Then they hide in a locker. Then the woman finds them in the locker. Yeah. Then they're stuck on a ledge with lads shouting out either side of the window, and they're trapped. And Schubert says, I've got a brilliant plan. I'll use my music, turn you into a baby. I'll jump down, catch you, and I'll break my bones, but you can turn back into a person and then go get those eggs. And Mozart does not get a better idea. We'll use music. which it was kind of like, fuck you, Mozart. But he does have a new song. Well, an old song, but one he hasn't used before. I forgot what it was because it was all bit tune and I can't fucking remember.
Yeah, it wasn't a great remixed or reversioned song, I would have to say. And that's generally a weakness of the second season, I think, is the new songs aren't as good as the first season's. I wonder whether that is specifically one of the ones that Salieri was accusing Schubert of plagiarizing.
Oh, that would be kind of a perfect one because he ends up... They do actually talk about their music and stuff in this, and Schubert actually comes to respect this song, so that would tie into it very well. But like Mozart even has the line, is like, what are you talking about, dude? I love your music. And it was just like such a what? kind of thing. Yeah, that he actually like... And I can't, like, I think he is a shit, but you can't tell entirely if he's a shit, that kind of way, you know?
Yeah, and we know he's got good parts with him in him as well. No, and
that has come up.
He's got some terrible parts. The bit where he's in there in the lift and he goes, listen very carefully, as I'm going to whisper this in your ear.
It's like, well, just the two of us here. I don't see why I have to. And then farts straight in his face. And I was just like, yeah, I could have told you that, Schubert, but you're too much of a fucking... an easy mark.
And we get the idea that Schubert's jealous of the relationship between Beethoven and Mozart because of Schubert's own relationship with Beethoven in the past.
Yeah, and the fact that they have nicknames in the present, that kind of way. Yeah. So it's both related to all his memories that he remembers his entire fucking life up to his death.
Yes, because we see him remembering his death in this episode.
And even in the second life, he hasn't really gotten the chance to get close to Beethoven, which is someone who he can respect and whom he was never accused of plagiarizing.
Yes. But Mozart's like, no, we don't get along that well. It's because
they kind of have a weird respect.
Yeah, it's because they were on the run together as well as classicaloids.
Yeah.
Because we occasionally see it, but they were together a decent amount of time before they got to Cannes.
Yeah.
At the start of the first season.
Well, that and they lived out their life as an old couple in the last season as well.
Yeah. And also the animation was very close to reaching some of the heights of the first season as well in this episode.
Yeah, not entirely, but yeah, definitely kind of going for that.
Yeah, it wasn't a great episode. I don't think anything this season's been great, but this was like the closest to touching that greatness of what the first season was doing. I really, really, really enjoyed this episode. And there's another melancholy episode. Who's the melancholy of next week?
Dovahkiin.
That's it, yes.
It's weird that like, this season is, I think, pretty obviously weaker, but still very enjoyable.
Yeah. Next up, we've got Pop Team Epic, episode 6. In which we start with Kamikaze doing a short, first of all, about they're talking about career counselling. And Popoko says she wanted to be a paladin, and the career counsellor wasn't having any of it. But PPME's mind is drifting toward... She's not listening and thinking of Hellshake Yano.
Yeah, and later she's thinking of a variation on that?
Yes, because the second half, after the credits run, we come back, and she's now thinking in the female-voiced one of being a demon slayer, I think.
And changing her class, yeah.
It's like a fry cook or something in the male-voiced one for her new career. And she's like, PPB's drifting off. She's like, are you thinking of Hellshake Yano again? But we see that she's actually thinking of Magma Mixer Murata.
Oh, that was it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Then we get the lengthy sketch by Space Necker Company again. This time it is 30th Cyber Warfare.
How many references are in this?
Oh, so many. And if you've got...
I need to keep a running list.
Yeah, High Dive... I think one thing a couple of things. There was one thing I recognized without needing them to point it out, and there was one thing I would have never have recognized.
I got Hayachi Mishima. I assume that's who that was, but it might have been any number of guys.
It could have been, yeah. So it's about Shogi, despite the title. Yeah. Pippa B is basically the equivalent of the ghost character Hidekaru no Go.
Well, I was going to say Yu-Gi-Oh, but yeah, that's my frame of reference.
Yes, but Hidekaru no Go is specifically a Heian era ghost of a Go player, but obviously it's Shogi here, not Go. And the Big Four, is that a Pokemon reference?
Or I mean, like the Elite Four. I feel like there's always, like, in a few things, there's been the top four guys to be, or something like that. I like the way the first guy, like, gave up without doing any moves.
because she was
completely inscrutable.
Yeah, she wins the first game by playing no moves.
The second one, she actually does play a few.
Yeah.
Against the lady with her two...
That character is apparently based on a stand-up comedian.
Oh, okay. I figured that seemed like a kind of character that someone has beaten in one of these kind of shows before.
Okay. Yeah, she took 70-odd moves to beat her, turning her into a pile of salt. the cyborg character comes along.
Well, initially it's Hayachi Mishima, but, you know, defeats him to the point where he falls apart, and it's like, you know, the cyborg skull is like, yes, now you will reach the top boss kind of thing.
That took one move. The opening move was enough to blow him up.
Yeah. It was a good move.
And it turns out, oh no, it was the head of the top of the organization was peeping me all along, and she wasn't a ghost. She was a hologram of a...
Yeah, everything up to this point has been holograms.
Yes.
I forgot about the fucking commentators in this entire situation.
Oh, yes.
They're like... The man doesn't have a fucking clue what's going on.
He's the expert.
But he's the expert. But he doesn't quite understand it. And he's like, well, that's really interesting. And the woman keeps just repeating what he's saying.
Yes, that was pretty great as well. And also saying, oh, how scary.
Ah, fuck. That was probably my favorite part. I mean, the references were kind of like, this is a lot of references that I'm missing entirely, but I did like the commentators for some reason. Just that they were so bad at their job. Yeah.
I assume the AI thing is a point about the development.
Oh, the actual one they're making.
Go
AI
that they've got so far, they've stopped bothering at this point. And they're moving on to other things. I like the fact that the building is shaped like a giant shogi piece.
Yeah, the kind of reveal of that obviously it's at the top floor.
And they have like a big old, almost like a Fist of the North Star battle with their hands playing pieces. But if you notice, there's things in their hands which are pieces from other games.
Oh, shit.
Everything blows up. PPB blows up. All that's left is her bow. But her AI is still
AI
in the bow.
Is still in the bow, yeah. So it's all okay.
The end. They would get another Akbu one where the girls have gone to, I don't know how to pronounce it. It's Koshin.
I can't think of the, because it gets all regional.
Yeah, it's like the high school high school baseball finals thing that they always talk about in high school baseball anime. So they kind of run through things they're going to do there, and the final one is them going out in the first round. Then we get another kamikaze one where Popoku is dismissing this what couples say to each other show. In the high dive one, I think it works better because they translate it as sweet pea.
Okay.
Rather than just PPP. In the Crunchyroll one.
Yeah, I might have to switch to High Dive so I understand what the fuck this show is talking about sometimes.
It's a weird situation where I think, as I said before, I think the translation's better on High Dive, but the quality control is better on Crunchyroll.
I really don't want to watch this episode like four times every fucking week, dude.
And then she tries attaching it to PPP's name, and it seems to actually work. Obviously, because her name is also contains part of the cute nickname in there already.
I think the way she was hiding behind the couch is like, well, I think it's a good nickname.
Then there are concerts, and Popoko's glow stick starts talking to her.
So she names it.
Dime Loss. Do you know what Dime Loss is? I did not know what Dime Loss is.
No, I do not know what it is.
Thankfully, the High Dive subtitles informed me that it's a talking sword from the Tales of Destiny series.
What a very specific reference.
Yeah.
But that's not its name, so...
It is a video game reference, so that is not unusual for this show.
No, yeah.
Then it is Pop Team Cooking, where they're making chocolate...
Just say stop when you think there's enough sugar.
So she says stop, but she carries on putting sugar in. End of episode. They never get as far as making the chocolate.
Nope.
Then it's another Akamu one, and it's the return of the duvet preventing Popoko from going to school.
But it's all gross and weird.
And also, it's not just the duvet, other things are gagging up.
It's the duvet, the mattress, the curtains are getting in on the action. Yeah. The alarm clock has killed itself. just so she will go back to sleep.
And then she gets... I don't know how you describe her face when she goes to sleep. It's like as if you took the style and tried to make it realistic.
Yeah, so she's got like some weird kind of double-sided, the top and bottom lips are both testicles that are just moving up and down as she's snoring, kind of thing. And I was like, "This, I hate this style. It's so ugly." Obviously, that's the point.
I love this style.
Not specifically for me to hate it, but for it to be really fucking ugly. It's doing that very well.
No, it's right up my alleyway. And finally, Popoko requests that you subscribe to her channel, because if you don't, those people who don't subscribe, she's going to come around your house and find you.
Yeah, I think that would have worked had my doorbell been working, maybe. I don't know.
Yes, it's a different... I can't remember what the... what.
I think it's knocking on a window or something, or banging on a pipe.
On the male version, yeah.
Mm.
That was it this week. It moved very quickly. I was like, blimey, is that the first half done? It was it's a shame. I guess we're not getting any more music videos. We've just got the two Pop Team Cookings instead of the Pop Team Live. And probably no more French ones.
But, yeah, they seem to be just moving around between different animators, besides the
Bob core team three. Yeah, so you've got Akbu, Kamikaze, and... Space Neko come. Oh, there was no video game stuff in this one either, was there?
Oh, that's right, actually, yeah.
We shall see. Who knows what we're going to get next? Well, obviously, it seems like we know we're going to get a lengthy Space Neko Company sketch and a bunch of Kamikaze actual adaptations of strips. But beyond that, yeah, you're never quite sure. I'd always like your reaction to the Akbu ones, because...
I can't say I hate them, but I kind of do. so, yeah, weird position.
Next up, Ancient Magus' Bride, episode 18, Forgive and Forget. Guess what? I've forgotten what happened in this episode.
let me try and remember the gist of it.
It's like, so, like Elias is going wonky at the start, and then they put him to sleep in the second half.
Yeah, the kid, I've forgotten the little girl's name.
I've written lots of names down. Stella.
Stella. Stella shows up at the door and she's like, "Oh, fuck, I didn't actually expect you to come." He's like, "I brought sweets because that was the deal, remember?" And I was like, "I'll be back in like, I don't know, a month or something like that." And she'll bring more sweets then. And she's hanging out with Chisa and I wouldn't say like girling it up or anything, but they're having a little chat and she says like, "Oh, wow, it's really nice to talk to someone around at my age. What age are you?" And she's like, "I'm 10. What age are you?" "I'm nearly 16. And it's like, fuck. You know, it's kind of like that kid is way too mature and you're way too childish kind of thing. Good little combination of it there. But I think Elias is getting jealous is later, I think, how Chisa explains it to him. And... again, he's just learning all the bad emotions. he's turning into a literal monster again. And he, I think when Chisa chases after him at one point, he like grabs her and refuses to let her go in like a horrible tentacle monster way.
Yeah. And then Ruth's going to look for them and runs into... The child
that is also the mother that we saw previously. It's like, because she mentions, "When I become my mother, I hope you bring me this kind of gift again, because it's like, as thanks for that gift, here's a gift of my flame. And the flame obviously shows up what shadow Elias is hiding in. A specific bush, basically.
Yeah, I believe she's like supposed to be like the physical embodiment of winter.
Yeah, yeah, this idea of death and rebirth. So giving birth to yourself kind of thing, yeah. Weird weird stuff. But, Chise also uses her wand to summon that firebird thing again to show Ruth at least the right direction. I'm trying to remember what else now. Oh, yeah, Chise threatens to stab herself in the neck unless Elias lets it go. You wouldn't like that, would you? He's like, no. And then she kind of like, were you mad at me? And he's like, yeah, I was mad at you, but I'm not mad at you anymore. Come on, we'll go home. And the dog's kind of, Ruth is kind of like, it's like, he was acting like the dad and she was like the kid, but now she's the mom and he's the kid. The fuck is going on with these two? they got a weird relationship. So, yeah.
Sings him a song and accidentally puts a spell on him.
Yeah, because she said, okay, we'll go to bed together. Not like a sex thing, but just like, we'll sleep together, get that kind of intimacy down, and we'll talk about how we feel and everything. But he's knackered from turning into a monster. So she sings to him. But that puts him to like sleep for several days. And he's like, okay, I'm fucking really worried. She has to go all the way to London to meet up with
Angelica Bali.
Yeah, Angelica, to go like, oh, you're the only other mage I know. You got to tell me what's going on. But she's too busy doing something. So she just has a nice chat with her husband, who's just some guy.
Yes, he's not a mage. And so talking about, oh, well, yeah, I'm going to die long before my wife and...
And daughter, yeah. And they understand this, and that's kind of rough for them. So I can see why it took me so long for her to go out with me. It wasn't until our child was conceived when I understood. And I was just like, dude, what the fuck? dear. But he seems okay, I guess.
Also, we see Stella and Ethan back in London, and yeah. Ash and Eyes does something to Stella.
Yeah.
In human form.
Like, I'm going to call him Joseph for the sake of it, because I'm mixing up the two of them. He appears to prick her with something, so he's up to some fucking hijinks. And
well, I thought it was Cartier Phyllis Joseph I thought it was originally, yeah, but it seems to be Ash and I in the human form.
I thought it was Ash and I was with him or something like that.
I don't know.
Entirely sure. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
Perfectly clear. But
I thought that was supposed to be like showing you who this person actually was.
Okay, I thought it was showing that he was with Joseph, yeah.
Possibly, but then we see that Joseph's somewhere else at the end of the episode.
I mean, like, it could be a fucking clone of him, but this fucking great. He's a weird guy. What were these
But I get the feeling Ash and Eyes wouldn't like that guy, so that's why I assumed it was Ash and Eyes in disguise, and it was just...
But he's already fucked with these kids. You think he'd just go like, okay, now to fuck with someone else. It's like, nope, still got...
Lack of faces to go around.
Yeah,
the same way that your other boy, Elias, took Chiso's face last episode.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, the Joseph guy, what was he up to at the end of it? I know it was also shenanigans.
He was kidnapping dragons.
That was it. He was, like, there was a SWAT team of trying to kidnap baby dragons, but their caretaker shows up and fucks one of them up really badly. Just stabs him with a sword. Like, that's not magic, but it'll do. And Joseph is kind of like, oh, okay, nice to meet you, Rob's dragon. Probably going to chop it up and slap it onto something else, knowing him, but so that's not good. So, yeah, there's still that. I mean, like, besides the menace of Chise, you're actually with, like, a literal fucking monster in this episode. There's still weird monster-y guys about the place up to no good.
By the looks of things, that was Joseph in London.
Yeah, so I don't know why Ash and I was with him. That's what confused me about that thing, that made me think that wasn't Ash and I in a human form. Because why would he look like Joseph? Well, that guy's a jerk. Oh, dear. But, yeah. There's some interesting stuff in this one, all right. It's weird. I'm still trying to get my head around it because it's such an odd relationship. And I'm not weirded out by the general, like, oh, the huge age gap in anime romance things, because they don't... Both of them are children and both of them are mature in opposite ways, if that makes sense.
I think he's not human enough.
So he's kind of like a child, and she doesn't have enough human interaction.
He's not in he's very rarely in his human form. It's not like their relationship is between his human form and her.
Yeah. Like, I think he's like, he needs to develop some of the more positive emotions before they can have anything close to that. What has he got so far? It was fucking jealousy this episode. Angry? I think he's gotten angry.
Yes.
lonely?
Yep.
Can't catch a break, can he? He's got to get one of the good ones sooner or later.
Righty ho. Next up, Dragon Ball Super, episode 127, The Approaching Wall, The Final Barrier of Hope. In which we discover the way to find Jiren's weak point is to insult his dreams.
I did like the fact that everyone was taking the piss out of 17 dreams. They're like, what? It's very hard for me to get time off work. a problem easily solved, not even with regular Dragon Balls, but with Bulma's infinite money power.
yes, so 17 tells Jiren that he's going to wish to take a cruise with his family using the Super Dragon Balls.
It's like, would you not wish to protect that island of guys forever so you can just live with your family? He's like, well, I'd be out of a job then. I'll wish for a holiday, a lovely holiday.
Whereas we learn that Jiren's terrible past where, his family were wiped out by some mystery villain. Mm. So he got together a bunch of guys, trained really hard to take on this mystery villain, took on the mystery villain, and then half of his friends got wiped out. And the
his
other
friends
ones
and his
quit.
Master. And I assumed his master was going to be like Toppo initially, like a younger Toppo, but it's like, nope, that motherfucker dead. And I was like, oh, okay.
I assume at some point we'll go back to that. We'll find out who that mystery villain is. Maybe he'll need Goku's help.
Yeah. it could be one of the guys from the other universes, considering they're supposed to be like the strongest guys.
Yeah,
I was almost wondering
it would turn out to be his God of Destruction. But it seems like the God of Destruction is also touched by the plight of Jiren's past.
Well, he's also like upset that Jiren seems to have like completely surpassed him in every possible way.
So it's basically this episode is 17 holding off Jiren long enough that Vegeta and Goku can get some of their strength back.
Like, he manages to get, like, he does do some damage to him by shooting him in the back.
Rips
apparently
his
that's
clothes.
Another weakness.
Yeah.
Yeah. His clothes aren't invincible. We know this now. Yes, we have a fighting chance. He also manages to smack an energy ball at the side of his head at one point. So it's like, you just got to get him in the blind spots, I guess.
Also, Frieza gets up again and decides.
Decides to help after everyone decided, hey, let's all shoot him at the same time. And I was like, Frieza, anytime now, anytime. Oh, okay, Frieza's probably still out for the count. But Frieza only gets up when they're done that plan.
Yes.
And still gets his butt handed to him.
Basically, he says, to damn hell with the rules. I'm going to kill you. You deserve to die.
And I'm the one who deserves to kill you, gets ass handed to self.
Yeah.
Poor Frieza. Yeah. Not really.
But it's good to see him lose his cool.
Yeah.
Like whatever plans he had, it seems like they're on the back burner at this point. It's just kill Jiren.
There's 3 minutes left now. And I know that's a long 3 minutes by Dragon Ball time. But you guys have the numbers. Just run away all the time. And you just beat him by numbers, right?
Don't blow yourself up like 17 did.
Don't blow yourself up. That's a bad idea. Let them blow you up and get disqualified.
But we can't feel the power of Jiren's real strength. We already see it on the TV screen.
Yeah, he sets on fire. And I was like, oh no, fire. And I was like, you guys set on fire like all the time, right? I guess it's not literal fire. Yeah.
Anyway, this was a good episode.
Yeah, pretty good. It's nice to see 17 just like be completely outclassed, but also like go like, I think I have some plans, you know. Yes.
Wait, he knows he's got infinite stamina, and I think probably because he's an android, he has a better idea of what his limits are than everybody else.
Limitations built in and is fully aware of what they are.
Yeah.
I was just thinking, like, I was like, how the fuck did he blow himself up? And I was like, oh, wait, they wished for 18 to not have her self-destruct device removed, but they wished just for everyone to come back to life, presumably with self-destruct devices implanted.
I guess so, yes.
Yeah, it's just like a weird technicality. I was like, oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah, I bet that's your fella from who does the manga. He was probably the guy who remembered that.
The continuity.
Yeah, because I do believe that is his thing. I believe whenever there's like a thing of like, oh, that thing, I think that's where he's the one bringing that to the table.
Okay.
And next week is made abundantly clear from the episode title, the Vegeta's getting eliminated.
Unless it's like a double bind, it's like Vegeta gets knocked down, I think is what it's called, or something like that. And I was like, so, like, is he going to be out for the count for a bit? Are you playing a thing? But based off how they've been named so far, it's like Gohan's last stand, you know, it's like, okay, no, he's probably fucked. Yeah,
I think give Vegeta an episode to himself, and then I kind of hope we get an episode of Goku and Frieza having to hardcore team up together.
I'm still, like, I know it's probably going to go to Goku and Jiren, but I really kind of want something weird to happen or something, you know, something that throws it off. Yeah. But I figure it's just going to go by rote. I'm still enjoying it, don't get me wrong. Like,
well, there's 3 minutes left, but there are 6 episodes left.
It's going to break it down to seconds, you know. dear.
And yeah, next episode we'll get the new Bulma.
Yeah,
she was
in
an advert this week, I do believe.
Yeah. It was actually a really good ad. She was a little flat in it, but so was Vegeta, because it's an ad for, like, bathroom cleaner or something. It's basically him, Bulma, giving out to Vegeta. It's like, oh, I need you to clean the bathroom. And he's like, what? Prince of Saiyans? And he just uses Final Flash to destroy the bathroom or something, rather than use the cleaning product that they're advertising. And I was like, that's actually a pretty good ad. I'm not going to lie.
Rightio, that's it for this week's Let's Go. We'll be back next week. But before we go, what's coming up on Secret of the Sailor Madness? Anything? Or is it on hiatus till Niall's back?
A little bit on a hiatus until Niall's back in the bigger smoke. But for now, still the Iron Giant up there. We're still kind of finishing off talking about Brad Bird's animation career, that kind of thing, and the Iron Giant in general.
Okay, we've just got up. We got Venus Wars on Dynamite in the Brain is currently up there, and also when this comes out, we should also have another episode of Man v Feud, where I completely lose it in my notes. I realise I'd missed things off the list.
Oh, no.
Have to hastily rearrange the episode as it's being recorded. So look forward to hearing me bumble through that. And then following that, we'll have Yo-Kai Watch Movie 2 with Bradley joining in us to make sure that it's not just me and Anthony. It's just not just me who likes the film.
Well, he does like the film, right? It's not too.
Bradley did.
One.
I liked it. I think Anthony would like it more than he would admit. I think there's...
Okay.
But I think the problem for him was, unlike the first film, because he liked the first film, he didn't like the series. Same as yourself.
I like parts of the series.
Well, he liked parts of this film, but it's like the series in that it's segmented. It's like five different mini stories, which sort of tell him one big story, but not really. They all sort of tie together to the last story. But yeah, weirdly, they're doing a relatively hard reboot by looks of things next season of,
like, that. Those new designs are going to be in the new season.
They are, yeah.
That's crazy.
They're skipping forward 30 or 40 years or whatever it is, and having those new characters from the film in there. How long for? I don't know, but whether it's a permanent change or not, I don't know. But there's a lot of level 5 things coming up. Because there'll be that, there'll be the Leighton, there'll be...
Inazuma 11.
I don't know if Snack World's still ongoing. Maybe Snack World will finish by then. Go watch the first 3 episodes of that, which are the only three episodes have been fan-subbed. I kind of watched it before, but then I got to the 3rd episode, I was like, oh, why isn't there more of this in English? The 3rd episode is so funny. It's by one of the Space Dandy writers, the 3rd episode is.
I'm going to have to check out the fan thing of it, because, like, I don't understand the reason for why that hasn't been badly dubbed into English. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's pretty good. It's got loads of, like, I hadn't realised it's got loads of fairy tale parodies in each episode, at least the first 3 that I saw.
Okay.
Yeah, it was fun, and I generally like level 5 stuff, but also level 5 stuff doesn't get simulcast, so except Time Bokan is the only one, and that wasn't really theirs in the first place. That was just them being invited to.
Yeah.
Also, I looked on the Anime News Network. I'm not sure if it's Anime News Network's credits aren't full for the second season of Time Bokan 24, but it looks like they've only crediting level 5 with character designs on that, not like the idea of the show anymore.
Oh, okay.
So that might also be why the tone changed, maybe.
Hmm.
Maybe a fella from level 5 wasn't pitching ideas in. Okie doke. We'll be back next week. Goodbye.
Bye.